Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sri Suka Uvacha. Tatashchanu Dinam Dharma. Satyam Socham Shamadaya. Kalina Balina Rajan. Nansyati Ayur Balam Smitihi.
Shankarshan Prabhu, you can read, and Ranabai, you can record his reading with that microphone. Loud so everybody can hear. So.
Truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, duration of life, physical strength and memory will all diminish day by day because of the powerful influence of the age of Kali, purport by Srila Prabhupada. During the present Kali, the present age, Kali Yuga, practically all desirable qualities will gradually diminish as described in this verse. For example, dharma, which indicates a respect for higher authority that leads one to obey religious principles, will diminish. In the Western world, theologians have been unable to scientifically present the laws of God, or indeed, God himself. And thus, in Western intellectual history, a rigid dichotomy has arisen between theology and science. In an attempt to resolve this conflict, some theologians have agreed to modify their doctrines so that they conform not only to proven scientific facts, but even to pseudo-scientific speculations and hypotheses which, though unproven, are hypocritically included within the realm of, quote, science, unquote. On the other hand, some fanatical theologians disregard the scientific method altogether and insist on the veracity of their antiquated sectarian dogmas. Thus bereft of systematic Vedic theology, material science has moved into the destructive realm of gross materialism, while speculative Western philosophy has drifted into the superficiality of relativistic ethics and inconclusive linguistic analysis. With so many of the best Western minds dedicated to materialistic analysis, naturally much of Western religious life, separated from the intellectual mainstream, is dominated by irrational fanaticism and unauthorized mystic and mystery cults. People have become so ignorant of the science of God that they often lump the Krishna consciousness movement in with this odd assortment of fanciful attempts at theology and religion. Thus, dharma, or true religion, which is strict and conscious obedience to God's law, is diminishing. Satyam, truthfulness, is also diminishing, simply because people do not know what the truth is. Without knowing the absolute truth, one cannot clearly understand the real significance or purpose of life merely by amassing huge quantities of relative or hypothetical truths. Shama, tolerance or forgiveness, is diminishing as well, because there is no practical method by which people can purify themselves and thus become free of envy. Unless one is purified by chanting the holy names of the Lord in an authorized program of spiritual improvement, the mind will be overwhelmed by anger, envy, and all sorts of small-mindedness. Thus, daya, mercy, is also decreasing. All living beings are eternally connected by their common participation in the divine existence of God. When this existential oneness is obscured through atheism and agnosticism, people are not inclined to be merciful to one another. They cannot recognize their self-interest in promoting the welfare of other living beings. In fact, people are no longer even merciful to themselves. They systematically destroy themselves through liquor, drug, tobacco, meat-eating, sexual promiscuity, and whatever other cheap gratificatory processes are available to them. Because of these self-destructive practices and the powerful influence of time, the average lifespan, ayur, is decreasing. Modern scientists seeking to gain credibility among the mass of people often publish statistics supposedly showing that science has increased the average duration of life. But these statistics did not take into account the number of people killed through the cruel practice of abortion. When we figure aborted children into the life expectancy of the total population, we find that the average duration of life has not at all increased in the age of Kali, but it is rather decreasing drastically. Footnote: according to the United States Statistical Abstract for 1984, there were about 3.7 million live births in the United States in 1982, and the average life expectancy at birth was 74.5 years. But when the 1.5 million abortions are added to the live births, the average life expectancy for conceived children falls to 53 years. Balam, bodily strength, is also decreasing. The Vedic literature states that 5,000 years ago, in the previous age, human beings and even animals and plants were larger and stronger. With the progress of the age of Kali, physical stature and strength will gradually diminish. Certainly, smriti, memory, is weakening. In former ages, human beings possessed superior memory, and they also did not encumber themselves with a terrible bureaucratic and technical society as we have done. Thus, essential information and abiding wisdom were preserved without recourse to writing. Of course, in the age of Kali, things are dramatically different.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane. Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nivishesa Sundavadi Paskata Deshatane Pancha Kalpatidu Vaishjaki Prashanubi Vajapatita Nam Pavanivyo Vaishnavavyo Namo Namaha. This is a verse from the 12th canto, which is the final canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The translation and purport is by His Divine Grace, Srila Hridayananda Das Goswami Acharyadev. Because generally the devotees are lecturing on the earlier cantos, I thought it would be nice that while I'm here I can read from this canto, especially the chapter under discussion entitled The Symptoms of the Kali Yuga. Srila Prabhupada very often quoted these verses from the 12th canto because they are especially effective in making us very sober about our present situation in the Kali Yuga, and will bring us to the point of becoming prepared to meet the onslaught of Kali Yuga. So we may examine some of these symptoms which are stated herein by Sukadev Goswami. First of all, Srila Sukadev Goswami says that day by day, because of the powerful influence of Kali, religion will deteriorate. So we can see that true religion, Dharma means true religion, is very hard to perceive. Practically speaking, when most people talk about being religious, they only have at best a very vague understanding of what God is. And as far as worship of God goes, their entire worship consists of making demands from God, that God should be their order supplier. So this is not real Dharma. Real Dharma is described in the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, where Krishna says, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja Mam Ekam Saranam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papio Muksyasyami Masucha. Real Dharma is described as where one gives up all kinds of false dharmas, adharma, and surrenders unto the true dharma of devotional service to God. There are many different types of persons who pray to God for materialistic goals, but they are not counted as pure devotees. They are at best mixed devotees, those who desire material affluence, those who desire some type of mystic perfections, or even those who desire impersonal liberation or salvation are not pure devotees. Now, our process is to teach pure devotional service to God. And for this reason, we see that throughout the Vedic literatures, there are many examples of how Krishna or Krishna's incarnations deal with the devotees to bring them to the point of pure devotional service to God. That means that we see that there are many instances of Vedic history of where a pure devotee is rendered totally dependent upon the mercy of Krishna. So many examples are there. The Pandavas were placed in a position where they were dependent upon Krishna. Kunti was placed in such a position. Draupadi was placed in such a position. Many, many different personalities were placed in a position where they had to depend totally upon the Lord. And that is considered to be a special mercy of the Lord, just like it is mentioned in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, that one of the themes of Prabhupada's life was that when Krishna is very kind upon a devotee, he takes everything away from such a devotee. He takes everything away except his lotus feet. So our prayer is to actually be involved in real dharma. Dharma, dharman tu shakshat bhagavat pranitan. Religion is not man-made, it is God-made. And the real religion is to surrender purely unto the lotus feet of Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has had some very nice discussion in this regard with Srila Ramananda Roy, in which Ramananda Roy took the position of being a teacher, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the position of being a student. And he placed many questions in front of Ramananda Roy as to what was the actual purpose or true religion. And Ramananda Roy put forward many different types of religious practices, beginning with the performance of Varnashram. And bit by bit by bit, step by step, Lord Chaitanya only became satisfied when Ramananda Roy described the loving service of the pure devotees of Vrindavan. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very much pleased with this description of what devotional service is. So in the Nectar of Instruction, Upadeshamrita, you will find in the final verses that one should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's pure devotees and render pure devotional service unto Krishna. This is the goal of the Krishna consciousness movement, to bring us to that point. And we have to find that goal within the theme of our daily activities and service. In former times, the yogis used to meditate all day long for their entire life, or in the performance of big Vedic sacrifices, or in opulent temple worship. Now here we are in the mood of combat with the forces of Kali, and yet we have to have the same ability to meditate on Krishna even in the midst of such active devotional practices. So this morning program, when we hear about Krishna, when we chant Krishna's glories, is meant to fix us in the right consciousness, so that when we take up this mood of combat with the forces of Kali, we don't forget what our purposes are. Our purpose is to establish the kingdom of Krishna. And that kingdom of Krishna is not of a wrathful God. But Krishna is the eternal cowherd boy, and he's actually conquered by those who have developed pure affection for him. So this conception of God is unique. In other religious systems, we don't find God being worshipped without a tremendous amount of awe and reverence. Only in the, practically speaking, even within the various Vaishnav sampradayas, they are very much covered with awe and reverence. But in this Gaudiya Vaishnava sampradaya, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared, he has removed the veil of Krishna's opulence in such a way, or Krishna's, you know, awe and veneration mood, to reveal Krishna in different form. And that is as we see Radha Kalachandri. All of these Radha Krishna deities which Srila Prabhupada has installed around the world. So we have to develop that intense attraction to Krishna through our devotional practices, and that, know it, that that is the goal. So in this age, Kali Yuga, true religion is missing. Instead, the ministers and priests are doing business in the name of religion. And very often the business is extremely irreligious. Bingo games are very typical. So gambling is the one of the main activities for which people attend the church nowadays. Or big feasts in which they barbecue, you know, animals and serve them out to the public. That is another favorite pastime. And it goes on and on like this. And this is what is known as religion nowadays. It is a social gathering of barbaric, you know, lusty people. So we have to, you know, show a very, very different image to the world. And we are doing that. And gradually people will appreciate, those who are sincere will appreciate. But it will draw out, the demarcation line will become clear more and more as Kali progresses in his, you know, work of where the devotees are and where the demons are. It's going to become very clear. And we should be prepared to be very strong in order to combat the forces of Kali. We have to organize ourselves, equip ourselves in every way. That means we have to be, first of all, philosophically situated. We have to know the philosophy so that no one can sway us or defeat us. And in addition to philosophical conviction, there has to be purity. Because even if one is a big philosopher, if he's not pure, then what is the use of his philosophy? It becomes like the braying of an ass. Asses are also considered to be big philosophers. At least they think of themselves that way. Prabhupada always points out, and we used to see them in Vrindavan, hee-hawing. And Prabhupada would say, just see how this ass thinks that he's, you know, singing beautiful poetry and spouting philosophy. But actually, he's an ass. So in the same way, the professors, etc., who spout so much poetry and philosophy, may appreciate themselves very much, but unless they're pure, unless they have purity, then what is the value? It is like the hee-hawing of an ass. It has no upliftment. It has no beneficial upliftment for anyone who hears them. So this satyam means truthfulness. Truthfulness means to repeat the words of Krishna. Krishna is the absolute truth. Truthfulness as opposed to mental speculation, which is another form of gambling. We don't engage in such mental speculation, even though people find us boring sometimes. We're not boring, but sometimes people say that, why don't you, you know, deviate a little bit from this subject of Krishna and let's have a real conversation. But we don't feel that that's the limitation is not, that we don't find any limitation. The subject matter of Krishna is unlimited. You know, where is there any example of hundreds of volumes of literature about any one subject? Encyclopedia Britannica is only how many volumes? 20-something, 24 volumes. But Prabhupada wrote 30 volumes of the Bhagavatam alone. And there'll be another 30 volumes before the Bhagavatam is completed. And the Bhagavatam is one book. And then there's so many other volumes of other books. So no one would say that the information or subject matter of an encyclopedia is limited. So we have more books than an Encyclopedia Britannica. Now how can they say that it is limited? It is an unlimited matter. But it is all based on the Parampara statements. Truth. Truthfulness means to bring out Krishna. That is to be truthful. And devotees have to learn to be truthful. Truthful to themselves, truthful to their spiritual master, truthful to the other Vaishnavas. To be truthful means that you have to be willing to admit your own faults and your own shortcomings to yourself and to others as well. One should not try to smooth over one's shortcomings. We have to be very realistic about these things. If we have something which is faulty within us, then we should be willing to see that. And if we can't see it, then we should be willing to have other people tell us about it. And we shouldn't resent that. If a devotee, a god brother, a god sister, or whatever, another devotee speaks to you and reveals something about you, then you should not mind it if that person is doing it with the mood of trying to purify you and benefit you. Because the soul is by nature pure. We have to understand that we have come in this material world on account of impurity. So it stands to reason that there are many impurities lying within us, and we should not become upset when someone points them out to us. In fact, it is said that a person who points out your shortcomings is a better friend than someone who simply praises you all the time. We don't need some... Praising is good, but so is a certain amount of chastisement or reprimand. And one is said that one should be very, very tolerant and lenient with others, but very strict upon oneself. This is how you can be a very exemplary person. You can be lenient with others, but be very strict with yourself. So truthfulness is diminishing. People don't want to admit so many things about themselves. The whole cosmetic industry is simply a industry based on untruthfulness. And there's our representative of untruthfulness, Krishna Shakti, helping everybody to conceal the truth. No one ever described your business like that, but that's a fact. People don't want to admit that the lines are coming in their face and the gray hairs are coming, and actually people don't want to admit that they're not as attractive as they would like to think that they are. And we don't worry about things like this, because our concern is two things. How attractive Krishna looks. And in order to represent Krishna, we also care about our attractiveness, because we represent Krishna. So Krishna will be judged by the devotees here. So you have to be exemplary also in all respects. In what you say, in the way you appear, in all respects, you have to be as exemplary as possible to represent Krishna. So, in this day and age, there is so much false propaganda. The highest authorities, in fact, are liars, practically speaking. Government leaders, people in the educational field, in science, they're just constantly spewing out lying propaganda to the point where nobody knows what is true and what is false. When I had a discussion with Prabhupada about the universe, Prabhupada was asking me to, with a couple of other devotees, to try to understand the fifth canon of the Bhagavatam and to make schematic drawings. So we were discussing about how the how one can take a plane and go from India to New York by going around the earth. So Prabhupada didn't like this statement. I was trying to explain to him different things, and he was trying to explain to me the statement of the Bhagavatam in regard to the the whole creation of the universe. And finally Prabhupada became very angry, and he just said, "You are prejudiced." He said, "You have simply accepted all the lying propaganda from childhood, and now you will not hear me with a impartial, you will not give my words any impartial hearing. You are completely prejudiced." And then I didn't know what to say after that. Well, that's a different issue. It was very complicated what Prabhupada was explaining, but the point I'm making is that we have become victimized now by this false propaganda and so much falsity in all, areas. We were watching yesterday in the airline, we were watching what people were eating. The man sitting next to us, they were eating French toast. First he ate his French toast, then he drank coffee, and then he ate his oranges. I just was thinking, why do you at least eat the oranges first? Why eat the oranges? Hey, you're going to definitely upset your stomach. But nobody knows anything. Nobody knows anything anymore. Even simple, simple things people do not know. They don't know anything. They don't know what to eat, how to eat it. They don't know what to think, what to do. So this is the position of the Kali Yuga. Because people do not know the absolute truth. When you don't know Krishna, then all of your knowledge becomes polluted and confused. When we joined the Krishna consciousness movement and we found out about Krishna, then suddenly we began to understand all of the relative truths in relationship with Krishna. Everyone had this experience, I'm sure, of how suddenly all of the different things which you could never put together suddenly fell into place. Because we had the key part, Krishna. So without Krishna, everything becomes bewildered. And the scientists are very bewildered. They're constantly trying to understand things, simple things which the devotees understand. The biggest brains are not able to fathom. Just like that life comes from life, not that life comes from matter. They can't see this. Or that an embryo is alive. They can't see this. I mean, that's amazing. They've made a movie now, Mukunda Marsh was telling me, I think our ITV has it, about this abortion issue. Do you know what the name of that movie is? Right, Silent Scream. I haven't seen it, but I heard about it. But they, it's so clear from that movie that the fetus is alive, and they're all now, I was reading in one magazine how they're all coming to the pro-abortion people, they were all coming to defense saying no, that actually they manipulated the, speed of the cameras to demonstrate that the fetus is alive, and they did this and this, and it doesn't prove it at all. They go on, very strongly presenting their case, going on with their lying propaganda so that no one will think that actually murder is being committed. We have to present the truth in the face of so much untruth. And generally speaking, in history has shown that those who present the truth usually get, some type of harassment. They get attacked. Persecuted is the word. They get persecuted for presenting the truth. So we're also persecuted, aren't we? The Hare Krishna movement, we're persecuted to a certain extent. But nevertheless, we have to be very tolerant and determined to present the truth. That's our business. Otherwise, the world is, in a hopeless mess. Shama means tolerance or forgiveness, and that is also a diminishing quality. We have to practice that amongst ourselves, to be tolerant and forgiving. you have to hate the sin. I think Jesus said it, hate the sin, not the sinner. So you have to understand that everybody has joined here. All of the devotees who are sitting here, they have all joined with a sincere desire to become Krishna conscious. Nobody here is joined thinking that I'll join this movement and get some money. And if you did, you're pretty stupid. No one should have joined with that intent. No one joined with material, you know, motivations of that type. Everybody here joined with the idea that now I want to become a devotee. So when we deal with each other, let us always remember that point. Let us, you know, always remember this point and not become intolerant seeing some problem that some devotee is having. We should not forget. We should actually always think that this, in a very positive way, that this person wants to become Krishna conscious and there's some difficulty. Let me help them over this difficulty. Not that we suddenly start to strike off the names of devotees thinking, oh, this person's useless, this person's useless, you know, this person, you know, is not sincere. Everybody here is sincere. If they weren't, they wouldn't be here. And even people who have left here are also sincere. It's only that they were weak. It's not that they were insincere. Of course, a few people may be insincere, but generally speaking, those who take the Krishna consciousness are actually sincere persons. But Maya is very powerful. So we have to be very tolerant and forgiving. But with ourselves, we should be very strict, as I said before. We should be very intolerant with our own, you know, shortcomings. That means we should root them out very strongly. Of course, in the material world, there is no question of this tolerance and forgiveness. People have no tolerance. In order to be tolerant, you have to be self-controlled. In order to be tolerant, you have to have conquered over the dictation of the senses. One who is led or controlled by his senses has no ability to be tolerant. So this is bhakti yoga process of using the senses in the service of Krishna fully will allow you to become very tolerant. Otherwise, it's very hard to be tolerant. Then, socham is cleanliness. There's very little cleanliness in the Kali Yuga. People go to the toilets, and then they don't even bother washing their hands when they leave the toilets. I see so many times we go to the in the airports, people use the bathroom, and they don't even clean themselves afterwards. And then they start eating. And it's just unbelievable how little they know of what cleanliness is. Cleanliness of the body, what to speak of the mind, how polluted the mind is. It's terrible. You have to be very careful about this, the pollution of the mind, because you know that all actions are preceded by the subtle thoughts and feeling and will. Before the germ of action takes place, it exists in a subtle form in the mind. So if you have not kept your mind clean, then you should expect that sooner or later it's going to lead to unclean activity. Sometimes devotees take shelter of the fact that in the Kali Yuga you don't get the results of bad thoughts. You know that? Whereas in the previous yugas you would get the reaction to bad thoughts. But in the Kali Yuga, you only get the reaction to bad actions. But what you don't understand, or those who think like this don't realize, that although you may not get the immediate reaction to bad thoughts, the ultimate reaction is it's going to lead to bad actions. So we have to, in the, as described by Krishna to Arjuna, you have to bring the mind back, fix it on Krishna when it starts to drift off. You have to do that, because otherwise if you allow your mind to dwell on subtle sense gratification, it's going to leave you very dissatisfied. Devotees who meditate within their mind on sense gratification, on thoughts of sex life and other things, it's very dissatisfying. and you're always in a disturbed condition, not pleased. So get off that subtle platform. Therefore, it's said, an idle mind is a devil's workshop. Everybody should be fully engaged so that your mind is actively being utilized in Krishna's service. Otherwise, your mind is going to start to think about sex life. In this age, that is what happens. So it's responsible leadership, the responsibility of the responsible leadership to see that all the devotees are judged properly according to their natures and engaged in such a way that their minds are taxed at every moment so that they won't have the time to think of sense gratification. You should have a very challenging service. Everybody should have a service that demands much more of them than they're capable of. Not as much as you're capable of. You should all do service which is much more beyond your ability. Because that way it's a constant challenge to come up to that point of service. So cleanliness of the mind also. Cleanliness internally, cleanliness externally. Prabhupada said, by bathing 2 to 3 times a day and by constantly chanting Krishna's glories, we remain externally, internally cleansed. And of course, our opposite counterparts in the material world, they don't have this ability. Very, very unclean, barbaric activity. The karmis are practically now engaged in activity which resembles dogs and cats. It's just so, very, very bad. The Prince Charles was donating blood, and they were asking him so many questions. Have you had any recent homosexual activity? Have you had any? Who can imagine the King of England 100 or 200 years ago being asked a question like that? That's what has happened nowadays, because it's possible. Anything is possible. There's nothing that is not possible in the Kali Yuga. As bad as you can think of things, the good chance it's going on in the Kali Yuga, or it will go on. So next is daya, or mercy. What is real mercy? Real mercy is to give someone Krishna, not to give them some kind of material arrangement. That is the sign of real mercy, that when you deal with someone, you give them Krishna. So our movement is distributing real mercy, not just material welfare work. We were discussing about this in Los Angeles in the class, that now there's such a big push for food for Africa, right? And everybody feels very good that they're all contributing to feed these starving people in Africa. But the question is that after feeding the starving people, if the people continue to do their sinful acts, then they're going to have to suffer to starve again in their next lifetime. Why have they been brought into this starving condition? What made them get the reaction of such a terrible starving condition? What sins did they commit? Now, unless you teach them about that and help them to understand, then they're going to do the same sins again and starve all over again. And again, you're going to have to collect money all over the world to feed them. So nothing has been permanently solved by this type of welfare activity. To our movement is therefore giving the highest welfare, which is to distribute transcendental knowledge in the form of these books and to establish our movement in such a way that it gives shelter to people so that they can get real mercy, which is to learn to stop sinning, to learn to get free from the karmic reactions, to sinful life. That is real mercy. To teach someone how to stop sinning, that's mercy. And everything else is not mercy. It is simply a material welfare work which is for naught after a certain time. And it says here that people will lose their duration of life and physical strength and memory. You know that in the Mahabharata there were great personalities who were more powerful than 10,000 elephants. It's described that people like Bhima had the strength of 10,000 elephants. Now you can just appreciate, elephants are so powerful, they can take a tree and break it. And Bhima had the strength of 10,000 such elephants. And that is not just some figurative speech. He actually had so much strength. And there were many such Maharathis present on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And nowadays, there is very little strength. Even the plants, the foods we eat, do not have their vitality. Therefore, everybody's taking vitamin pills. People take vitamin pills because they just can't get the vitality out of the earth that used to be there. The air, you see, just like air, breathing. Yoga system depends upon breathing because prana, the life force, comes from the air. You can keep alive just by breathing. But as the Kali Yuga progresses, even that prana, that quality of life which is within the air, becomes diminished. Everything is diminished in this age. A very difficult time. People's strength is reducing more and more. Everybody here, if you say, how do you feel? You feel full of vitality? No one will say yes. At least very few people will say it. Most people have to admit, no, I'm not. I feel a little undernourished or tired or, you know, like that. And more and more this will happen. It's not just us. Everybody feels that way. Everybody's feeling that way. That's why they all go to the gymnasiums and other places to work out, because they're feeling that way. That's why they have to do that. We don't read about Bhima working out. He already had a powerful body. By nature, his body was very fit and powerful. He didn't have to go, you know, to Lou's gymnasium around the corner. So, you know, this is the Kali Yuga. Physical strength is diminished. Duration of life, it's already explained, is diminished. Although people are very, very proud of the fact that their life, you know, it seems like every generation is living longer. But I don't agree with that either. We have seen people used to live to 80, 90 years. You don't find many people living that long anymore. And you have to factor in, it'll take place, but you'll see gradually the life expectancy will diminish. And certainly there's so many abortions, so that Srila Acharyadeva has correctly analyzed it, that the actual life expectancy is 53 years right now, not 74. This is a very good point to make, because when they come up with this figure, you know, 74 years, they take into account child deaths. That's what they do. They don't just say that the average person, it means based on, you know, everyone who was born and dies, they calculate the average age. And some people die at the age of 5, 10, 15, like that, by diseases, etc. So they're gradually getting rid of certain killer diseases, they say, so, you know, the life expectancy is going up. -4, -3, -0.4, -0.3. It brings down the average age expectancy. And memory is very poor. Everybody experiences that. So then what is to be done? That brings us to the point that in this day and age, the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the only method for purification, to counteract the influence of the age of Kali. Harinama, 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 Eva, Kevalam, Kalua, Nasteva, 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 Katir, Anyata. There's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way. What was possible in other ages by other methods now is only possible through the chanting of the holy names of the Lord, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So we have to spread this Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna Mantra chanting very, very vigorously, so that people can be helped to counteract the sinful symptoms of the age of Kali. So we'll stop here and ask if there are any questions.
Being clean internally and externally, sometimes devotees and hearing, because one becomes affected, you said, subtly, either by thinking or even by hearing mundane sound vibration. Occasionally, I've met devotees who have listened to the Karmi's radio and listened to that type of music. Could you elaborate?
Do they do that when they're in the course of their work, they have no alternative? Or
no. Like in the vehicle and driving in the car.
I can't imagine.
I mean, that's hard to believe. I mean, there's already so many of our devotees are making recordings which use all of the modern day sounds, so I don't see why they would need to do that. If you have an attraction for modern type of music, there are quite a few, productions now of our devotee groups who have nice music, devotional music, so obviously that's not very good. But that's all based on sex life, that music. You put that music on and listen to it, you're going to want to have sex life. It's just preparing yourself for that. That's ridiculous. People do that. It's pouring water while trying to light a fire. Every morning you chant 16 rounds and then you go and turn on the radio and groove to the sounds of... That's foolish. Foolishness. That's like the elephant that bathes his body and then comes out and starts rolling around in the dirt. Every morning you take your Hare Krishna, bath, and then you put on this polluting sound on the radio. That's not good. That's foolish. Another question?
Just a comment about abortion. There is an article that the IUD contraceptive device, they say that since the sperm and egg have united already, that actually is an abortion also, because all it prevents is...
Oh, yeah. This figure of 1.5 million abortions is the reported abortions.
This is a ridiculous figure. I mean, it's at least three times this. Minimum three times this amount. The average life age must be much less.
This is reported abortions going on in clinics and hospitals, and this is not all the other things that are going on. No mercy. No mercy. Prabhupada, one time Prabhupada's servant, Hari Suri, was telling Prabhupada that when he was in his mother's womb, his grandmother gave his mother some knitting needles and told her to get rid of the baby in the womb. But she couldn't do it, and she buried the knitting needles in her backyard. Prabhupada said, oh, horrible. No, they're so merciless. I mean, we see so many animals. I remember when I was young, I had some pet. I think it was a hamster or something. Or mice or something. Anyway, they after the little, mice are born, then sometimes the parents kill the mice. But where have you ever heard of an animal that kills the, newborn before they're born? No animal ever did that. Only the human animals do that. It's just, even from, animals are so merciless. It's like, man has sunk so low already. The human beings have sunk beyond, down below the animals' level. So fallen. Another question? Anybody have any questions?
Describing that the life expectancy has been diminished so much by this abortion that this propensity is increasing in the karmis. They're fighting against this movie, Silent Scream, etc. Their desire is to go beyond that. So, is Krishna's incarnation as this war and Kalki in defense of man?
Does Krishna come as Kalki to defend man? Yes, he does come as Kalki to defend man. At the end of the Kali Yuga, Prabhupada said that there will be, here's a picture of Kalki. When there are no more devotees left on this planet, then Kalki will come, and he will destroy everybody, all the demons who are remaining. Then the Satya Yuga will begin again. One of the ways to free the world of sinful persons is through war. There's different types of karmic reactions which come when the sins build up on a very large scale. Disease, pestilence, epidemic disease, natural disasters, earthquakes, floods, and war. These curb down the sinful population of the world. They're a way of, you know, curbing down the sinful population of the world. Another question?
Srila Gurudev, you were saying earlier in the class how a devotee shouldn't have a service that's, you know, more or less easy for him to do, that it should be something that's more than he's capable of doing. So sometimes when we are performing a service that is very difficult for us to do, you know, we are in a very uncomfortable position because there's so much to do and a lot of, you know, mistakes are committed. Sometimes we deal with other devotees improperly.
Well, it should not be so far beyond your ability, but it should be a little bit ahead of your ability. It shouldn't be so far beyond your ability that you start to become offensive to others. That's not good.